Hi everyone, I'm Jason Scorce and welcome to another episode of Dispatch from the Zombie Apocalypse. I hope everybody is doing great. Today I'm going back to the interview format and I have two guests that are pretty much perfect for a zombie apocalypse podcast. It is Tammy Weiss and Jesse Bradish, and they are the co-founders and principals of Practical Preppers Stars, and they are the ones who will help you stay safe in a natural disaster and get your family prepared. Their website is www.prepperstars.com, and they have a lot of great resources on there. And then if you want to get a little deeper, they have some consulting services to kind of walk you and your family through to make sure you're good to go on a situation where there might be an outage of services for multiple days in your area and making sure you're taken care of. So in this interview, we get into stuff, you know, beyond their business and a little more broader and talk about some of the macro stuff going on. But it's quite an interesting conversation. It's a great business, and I have a feeling they're going to be getting a lot of business coming up in the coming years and decades as disaster, unfortunately, only increases, both natural disasters and human-caused disasters, and they're kind of two sides of the same coin at this point in history. So without further ado, I bring you the co-founders of Practical Preppers. Enjoy. So, Jesse and Tammy, thanks a lot for joining me on the podcast.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having us.
Excellent, excellent. So, just going to, you know, have a bunch of questions kind of want to go through, and we'll see if there's some tangents we go off into. But just starting super generic here, what inspired you to create this business? And, you know, what was the motivation?
Sure, absolutely. So, we both did a master's in environmental policy. That's how we met you. And we were pretty concerned about where everything is going and that people don't really like to plan for worst case scenarios. And I'm sure we'll get into how there's quite a few that might be coming down the pike. But more specifically in the Bay Area, you know, a lot of people are concerned about the earthquake. So at work, around town, you'd hear everybody talking about how they didn't have an earthquake kit. And for all the times they talked about it, they could have made one already. But people seemed like they had a real emotional block to actually getting prepared. So that's where we started thinking this might actually be a business, helping people get prepared for stuff they're already actively anxious about, but can't seem to take any action on.
Interesting, interesting. And I see that because there's a lot of this inertia, right? There's so much inertia in the system and people, the anxiety, and you saw a business opportunity here to kind of help catalyze that. Did you have any emergencies of your own or any experience in this world that was more personal, not just a kind of what you were seeing in society?
Well, I was born and raised in the Bay Area, so I experienced earthquakes my whole life. And growing up with them, it wasn't necessarily something that was too terrifying of a situation, but it's definitely like that looming in the background there is the like, when's the next big one? So I had my own wanting to be prepared for the next one, and then seeing all the other fires in California and having friends personally affected by these fires recently is really, really drove it home.
Got it. Yeah, I was actually in the Loma Prieta quake at very near the epicenter. I think you were both quite young then. This is definitely dating.
But it's it's
the 30-year anniversary in a couple months here. Yeah. But I still remember feeling like the ground was liquid, like what that was, like it really messed me up because you think of the ground as like, you're okay, you know, like when you're in a plane and you land and like, and then it was like, no, the ground can just turn to liquid and be
totally
dangerous. Yeah. All right. Well, all right. So let's move on here to what do you believe are the most likely disaster scenarios that Americans, you know, may be expected to face? Obviously, there's a lot of stuff in the news, but kind of curious on your take on this. And feel free, it's a big country, to speak about certain regions or areas, you know, to break it down a little bit more detailed if you want.
Yeah, man, it's quite the list. Just more extreme weather conditions in general. Like, we've already seen flooding as a result of these drought and extreme rain cycles, snowmageddon, and then in coastal communities, sea level rise. We could delineate a little bit by region if that's, yeah. Jess, you wanna?
Sure. So I live in Chicago, and I thought climate change was maybe going to help us with this cold. So that's not actually what happens. It turns out that the polar vortex broke up the Arctic, and we had the coldest day in history a few months ago here, negative 50 with wind chill. It wasn't safe to be outside for more than a few minutes. So what really sucks about climate change is the thing you didn't like about your local region is just going to get worse.
Yeah. I think... You know, the Republicans who hold the snowballs and say that proves climate change doesn't. You're here to say that that's not how the science works, that it's just more extreme of everything, not necessarily winters don't happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Correct. Yes. They're confusing weather and climate, and I think they may be getting paid a lot of money to do so, and endangering the future of civilization in general with that garbage.
Yeah. Well, we're on the same page there. So let's maybe go to the macro level then for a second. I know your business focuses on the individual household level and the things that individuals can do to prepare. Do you feel like building into this work some of the kind of wider social implications of this, things for citizens to demand of their state and federal officials, you know, and what might that look like if you were to kind of map out your thinking at a more macro level?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these problems aren't necessarily things that individuals are going to be able to solve by themselves. So demanding that, especially at the local level, that your local government is prepared for these emergencies and disasters. Before we can even encourage people to do that, we need to kind of educate people as to whose responsibility it is to prepare for these things, because people do take a lot of individual responsibility and then become stressed and anxious about that. But if they can kind of encourage and demand their local officials to help them be prepared, like, that can take a lot of mental stress off of individuals and families.
So to back it up, we're talking a lot about the fall of civilization, which was Tammy and I, our original plan was apocalypse preppers, and it was getting ready for the end of basic services, but people get a little stressed out by that. So our current business model is just planning for a 7-day service outage where things actually will get turned back on. But the first part of dealing with the problem is admitting that you have one. And with so much inaction at the state and federal level that's being paid for by the oil and gas lobby, it's hard to get to the part of the policy cycle where you actually implement some sort of an agenda of change. So I think the most likely thing is for people to work in their local communities, groups like Transition Town, and creating some very hyper-local infrastructure to respond to these kinds of service breakdowns. You know, the Army Corps of Engineers, we get about a D rating on a lot of our infrastructure, and that's all going to be hyper-stressed by climate change. And we're already not investing in our roads and bridges and the kinds of things that hospitals, schools, that we need to be able to function as a society. So I wish that we would do something about it, but it seems like we can barely keep up on the things that were started under the WPA.
Right. So actually, that made me think, do you have a local community or a state or a region that you think is ahead of the game on this more kind of larger scale community level effort at preparation that you could highlight?
Yeah, so we both went through a training through the city of Oakland called CORE, and it's all about focusing on getting individual neighborhoods ready and prepared and trained for emergencies so that it's not all on emergency responders, so the neighborhoods can take care of themselves for smaller problems and not have to go to these bigger centers and try to get supplies and just, yeah, help neighborhoods be more locally resilient.
So Oakland, you think, would be a good kind of model for at least someone that's a community that's taking it pretty seriously?
Yeah, based on our experience, they're really focused on helping neighborhoods and local areas become more able to take care of themselves.
Great.
So I don't know if I'd want to be in Oakland when a disaster, but they do have a plan to help support the first responders. And it was actually because of the 1989 earthquake that they started that organization. And in other places, it's called CERT, C-E-R-T, Community Emergency Response Training. So everyone could become a first responder in their community. I think the rural areas are the ones that are the best prepared, where people have more supplies and some more know-how and are used to being a little bit more self-sufficient. In the urban environments, it's going to be really difficult if you have water or electrical outages.
Right, right. A lot of these rural areas, people have their own septic systems, they have their own water supplies. Right. You obviously have your big shed or whatever, your garage where you can right. stockpile, which in given the rents in the cities of the United States, there's not much hope for that on the mass scale.
Exactly.
Interesting. So maybe coming back to the micro level, you know, obviously your business, I've looked over all your materials and it seems like you're providing a lot of great services. I've noticed that, especially on the conservative media and the right wing, everything is, you know, buy gold and prepper kind of extremism. And because again, it's a whole fear-based ecosystem. And I presume the majority of these are scams. And I'm sure your business here is full of a lot of con artists and scammers. And so how do you differentiate? You know, your stuff is definitely legit, but how do you think the wider kind of citizens should view this to differentiate legit businesses from the people who are just trying to take advantage of your fear?
Yeah, so I mean, I think any business that is implying that you can escape these impending disasters is definitely a scam. I mean, there's not going to be any one place that you can go, even if the bunker is all tricked out. You're still going to feel the effects of climate change. So I think anything legit is something that's going to encourage you to think critically about what you and your household need, because there's not one silver bullet answer to fix things for everyone.
Yeah.
The luxury bunkers do come to mind, the abandoned nuclear silos in the Ukraine, where you can go and live with three people for the rest of your life, drinking high-end vodka. Is that really what any of us are trying to do?
Right, right. I've heard that in New Zealand, too. I think some Silicon Valley billionaires are building heliports and kind of armored solar bunker kind of things in New Zealand anyway.
PayPal founder, Peter Thiel. Yes, it is right. True. About half of New Zealand has been cordoned off for the
1% and their fantasies. All right. Well, moving on to your business again, you know, any surprises that you've come across, you know, I'm sure going, this is not, you know, when you were planning out your careers, this is probably not like, I'm going to be a disaster prep person here. So this is something new that you kind of saw a need for. And so therefore, what's been surprising to you as going down this path?
So we've had this great response. I mean, I think mostly we're surprised how much just a little bit of information and some clear instructions really helps people relax a little bit around the like not being prepared stress and anxiety. So how we've structured kind of our worksheets and our consultations, it just really helps people see clearly what aspects of their life they can prep for and things they haven't necessarily thought of, and just even thinking about things ahead of time is a big chunk of the battle.
It's really fun to walk through the worksheets with people and then see them. Most of the people we're working with have already started to think about this and are early adopters to making a better plan, and then having them come back a couple weeks later with their homework and showing us their first aid med kits for their 72-hour go bags and things like that, and seeing people actually looking excited about the prospect of being prepared. That's been a little surprising because it's not the most uplifting topic.
Right. I think that maybe it's just a sense of accomplishment. Like, hey, I did this, I'm ready. You know, that kind
absolutely.
Of, that kind of thing. Well, that's good. That's good that there's an upside to that kind of activity. So you know, one thing is, as an economist, I notice people are pretty bad at judging risks, right? And this leads to all kinds of complications in society. And I'm sure you see that in your work too. And so what do you think are the risks that people are really underweighting and then ones they're overweighting? You know, if you were to try to do a kind of more rational calculus for risk, what direction would you point people?
Sure. So I think I live in Chicago. So people in the suburbs are pretty sure if you go downtown, you will immediately get shot, stabbed, murdered, something super violent. They need to stop watching Law and Order and maybe the 7 o'clock news. So this concept that there is violent crime and there is violence in America and that is the biggest threat to our existence seems like a very overstated, and the threat of immigration. I think what's very understated is the actual systems that are creating this pressure. The climate change that is leading to the climate migration, which is leading to some of the global issues we're seeing right now, that's resulting in this weird totalitarian backlash. To me, the real risks are our failing infrastructure and our lack of an ability to support ourselves and each other, and obviously ecosystem collapse. So that's more of a macro, but what are you most likely to die of, or what is most likely to negative affect you in your life is probably the fact that we don't have a living wage.
Right. Yeah. So it seems like, so less fear of brown people and more fear of corporations trying to rip you off. Yeah. That would point us back in a more rational direction.
I'm still sure that they're not people. I don't know.
True, true. Well, you know, if you would indulge me for a minute, you know, as someone, I just turned 50 here, so I've been around for a little while in America. And one of the big macro phenomena that I've seen that is really fascinating to me. Like when I was growing up in New York City in the 70s, it was pretty dangerous. Like New York City in the 70s was pretty dangerous. I got into a lot of scrapes with some pretty rough stuff. And now the cities are actually quite nice. I always talk about how New York's kind of like Disneyland and everything's clean and it's amazing. And, you know, it's, you know, family friendly and kids, and it's this booming, safe environment. And then the rural areas are actually kind of where, you know, the opioid epidemic and suicide and the kind of despair. And it's a fascinating reversal, right? Because it used to be the suburbs and the rural that was the safer area, and the cities were kind of dangerous. And it's completely flipped. And there's no doubt that that's fed into this kind of the Trump mania, right? Is that the people in these rural areas who are actually in a pretty down and out circumstance, they want to believe still that the cities are these kind of hell pits. And if you think, look at Trump's rhetoric, I mean, every day the city, and so what you were saying about people are so scared to come into the cities, I think they must be shocked when they come in. They're like, wow, everyone's really nice and it's clean. And it's like Chicago was one of the cleanest places I've ever been. And it just must be it's just a fascinating big change demographically in the United States.
Absolutely. Yeah. And obviously the opioid epidemic, I mean, there's some really sad stuff happening in American society today. Our lack of a mental health infrastructure, you know, our lack of prevention and how much that ends up costing in the long run. As an economist, I'm sure you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's move a little more back to your work here. And I want to go a little deeper here and you know, again, a lot of your work is on, you know, people in their current locale, given the risks that they're facing, kind of being prepared, like you said, again, to kind of deal with a 7-day kind of service outage. What about a little bit more macro in the sense of, do you give recommendations on where people should live, right? People are moving a lot for work and personal reasons, and I think your generation is a much more mobile generation. And so is part of your work saying, hey, if you're going to buy a house or if you're going to move to a city, here are better or worse places from a risk perspective to actually locate?
Yeah, so that's not something we've gotten into a lot of, because we kind of see relocation as a luxury option, as we just kind of talked about with New Zealand. Like that most people we're working with don't have savings, much less the ability to relocate and go to a quote-unquote safer place. And I mean, it's also a matter of like picking your poison. Every region is gonna have issues. So yes, you can make choices to not buy a home like right next to the coastline that's gonna be flooded in a decade. But beyond that, there's no one spot in the United States to relocate and avoid all of this.
I personally, I do have a dream of having a land plan, and if it were to happen, it would be further north, but not as north as the permafrost, because it's less permanent every year. Low population area with a lot of underground water resources,
and surface water
and lower risk of fires. You know, so where is that exactly? It's hard to say, but I think when you look at, it's going to get wetter or drier depending on the location, and there's going to be a lot of fires and a ton of climate migration.
Right. Yeah, it looks like that would be a great GIS project for someone to take all those overlay maps to find those those places that meet all that criteria. So maybe we'll think of that as a side project.
That'll be a fun one.
Let us know what you find out, and then don't tell anybody else.
We could figure out a way to monetize that somehow. Yeah. Sell it to Peter Thiel. As someone who travels a lot and travels to places that are, I'm not going to war zones and stuff like that, but I am going to a lot of countries that are less developed. I'm often thinking, what's the preparation for that? Like, what if a natural disaster happens in a foreign country? Are there any tips you have for travel, the things that people should have that they might not, to kind of be, you're in Asia and there's a tsunami or something, obviously, assuming you make it out, are there things you would have that would better set you up for not having to suffer a lot in the aftermath?
Yeah, absolutely. Regardless of whether you're in Asia or Europe, like if systems break down, there's certain things that are gonna be helpful. So things we recommend are water purification tablets. They don't take up much space. Like that can just be added to a pretty robust first aid kit. Always keeping a fair amount of the local currency on hand, just to so that when systems go out, you have something. Of course, a multi-tool. Like actual paper map of your general area and kind of an understanding of your local resources, but be that a hospital or grocery stores. And then keeping all your travel documents on the cloud so that when electricity and internet returns, if anything was damaged, you have access to that and can get out of the country back home. Jesse, anything else to add to that?
It's good to do some research when you do travel abroad or even to another city and have a sense of what might be a natural disaster that could occur there and have an exit strategy. So if you're going to a place that has a lot of extreme storms or flooding or hurricanes and you're in a low-lying area, what would you do? Just have a plan already. It's very challenging to make a plan when you are in an emergency situation. So just having spent 5 minutes to think about it on the way there could end up making a big difference.
Yeah,
if you're going someplace where like most likely no one's going to speak English or very few people will speak English, just writing down phonetically a few basic words like help and I'm hurt, just to in case of extreme emergency like that, is helpful, because if you don't have internet, you're not gonna be able to look up Google Translate that.
Yeah, those are all really practical, because I was thinking even the paper map, we're all so in our Google Maps and all that. And just if you're based in the city for a couple of months, having that, that $5 map in the drawer, totally. So like you said, so you know where the hospital is or, a park or something like that. That all really makes sense. And the local currency too, because I've kind of gotten to where, everything's credit card now. I barely ever go to the ATM, but I hadn't thought of that you're probably in a foreign country, you want to have a little extra cash just in case, even if it's $20, something to get some
enough to, buy some water. Like that's going to be your,
Right.
Or even in the next earthquake, cash is king. When all the ATMs are down, here's a really scary idea. Google doesn't work and your cell phone doesn't work.
Right.
What do you do?
So yeah, I'm not going to be able to, I could trade my couple bags of cashews for something probably.
Yeah, and then what?
Yeah, not gonna last too long. Okay, one other kind of more longer term, and in some ways I know I'm kind of getting you off topic because I know you're really focused on the individual in the home and their neighborhood, but just because I thought these are interesting and I'm sure you have some thoughts on them, what about thinking more long term financially, right? So if you're looking at if you're an average middle class or lower middle class person in America, and you're thinking about your retirement and you're thinking about all these geopolitical risks and climate change and war and terrorism, and you're like, what do I do so that I'm not going to just be poor in old age? It might not be an immediate disaster, but it's kind of the more long-term trends. Do you have any thoughts on kind of how to manage long-term risk for people with their finances, stuff like that?
Absolutely. So maybe you can tell me a little bit more. It's my understanding that millennials are not saving.
That is true. With the student debt and all of that, they are not. But I'll say this, I did not have a penny of savings until my mid-30s. And, and just starting to put away money in the last 15 years has really helped me financially. So it's never too late. And so even if millennials aren't saving currently, you know, I think once you hit your 30s and 40s and hopefully you're getting a little bit more advancement in your career and making a little money, I think that's when it begins. And you still have 30 years until you retire. So there's going to still be a long window, right, of needing to think about where to put that assets.
Absolutely. So water, I think, is it depends on what you're betting on. If you're betting on systems collapse, water, some people are actually buying up landfills, assuming we're going to start mining them for precious metals. Really, you can't go wrong with precious metals and land if you're going down the doomsday path. In my scenario, it's hard to imagine that the S&P 500 or the stock market is going to be able to maintain if we do end up decarbonizing and all of these big oil companies lose a lot of value, or if we don't end up decarbonizing and then we have a bunch of huge disasters that disrupt the global supply chain. Both of those seem like they're really going to negatively affect the current stock market.
I also feel like having just a mental shift in quote unquote retirement. Like, I know a lot of my friends don't actually really expect to retire like our parents and previous generations have. Maybe we won't necessarily be working full time, but pretty much everyone I know and have talked with about this assume that we'll at least keep working part time or consulting or whatever it is, basically until we can't work anymore.
Well, that's a sad thing to hear, I have to say. It is an amazing fact that even, you know, well-educated professionals are starting to kind of build in a diminishment in the quality of life in America in the year 2019. It's a sad, sad testament to how much of the wealth the top 1% can suck out of the system and make everyone else worse off.
It's true. I'd rather be pleasantly surprised that maybe I get a little bit of retirement than sadly disappointed in my 60s.
Absolutely. All right. Well, a couple other questions here. I had to throw this one in just given the political moment. But do you guys think a big, beautiful wall on the Mexican border is going to make America safe?
No. All of our threats are internal at this point. I don't think a wall is saving anyone.
yeah, I don't think so. And it's kind of funny how nothing that the president claims has anything to do with the wall, right? Most people overstay visas who fly in. The drugs Absolutely. Don't come in over the border. It's all just kind of smoke and mirrors madness.
Absolutely.
Yeah, El Chapo just was testifying last week, right?
Oh, yeah. What did he say about that, about where the drugs are coming?
He said that drugs and people are being trafficked in through known ports of entry. What they do is they monitor when shifts change, where there's the lowest security, and they buy people off that walking across the desert is actually the most dangerous and least likely chance of success. And that is truly the road that the poor single moms and the toddlers are taking into our country. So just a bizarre, I mean, it's not bizarre. It's when you unpack it, it's really sad that that's something that we would consider spending money on when apparently we don't have money to create healthcare or, you know, alleviate college debt. Hard to imagine.
Yeah. You know, just to kind of get on the soapbox here again for a second, as someone who's studied American history pretty extensively in the politics, what's so sad about this fear-based kind of baiting is that it's as old as the country, right? This is literally the same playbook the rich and powerful white plutocracy has been using for 250 years. And like, you know, it's first, I mean, when I was growing up, it was the Japanese, they're going to come and take everything. Then of course, you know, 9/11 come and it's, you know, the scary brown people with headscarves are going to take everything. And now it's the Mexicans and it's the Chinese. And I'm, we can all take bets on who the next one is, you know? And it's just like, it's just endless, right? You can always just recycle them. I'm sure maybe it'll be the Japanese again, you know, I don't know. Japanese old ladies in diapers are going to be the big threat to America. It's so sad that this stuff still works. It's just so sad.
So I do actually have a question for you as an economist.
Yeah.
Do you think that we're headed towards another Great Depression or another like trust busting? It seems like a lot of the laws and regulations that were passed, 80, 100 years ago have been really undermined. So where do you see this going next?
Yeah, I want to be very clear that I have no idea what's going to happen, really. You know, I think there's a few scenarios that are more likely or less. I think a lot of this is going to depend on whether Trump gets reelected, you know, next year. I mean, I think if Trump gets reelected, it's basically a green light for complete, absolute corruption, kleptocracy on a scale that the United States has probably never seen, and just a full plundering of, like, again, on a record scale. And then I'm going to definitely be calling you guys if that happens, because I think systems can unravel very quickly. And I think this system is maintaining under this first administration of Trump, but in a very fragile state. If the system, you know, if he gets reelected, I don't know if the system could withstand it. So let's assume he doesn't get reelected. Then coming back to the more affirmative side, do we have the Senate? I could see I have a pretty dark scenario where we blow Trump out and don't win the Senate, and Mitch McConnell basically just says, fuck you, you're not doing anything, we're not even going to sit any of your judges. If there's a Supreme Court vacancy, we're just going to wait until there's a Republican president. And then we could be almost as bad as if Trump won, because then all that progressive inertia that had built up that's waiting, and then McConnell gives the big middle finger, and, you know, and then we have Trump 2 in 2024, right? So, and a Trump 2 is going to be a lot smarter, by the way. I mean, imagine a competent, intelligent Trump, right? And so there's a lot of really, I think the only good scenario here is if we win big in 2020 and win the Senate, and then I think use the budget reconciliation, which gets around the filibuster, to do some pretty meaningful stuff. And then I think you could see some pretty good stuff on student loans, on infrastructure, on Green New Deal, on daycare, on women's rights, stuff that could really make a real difference in people's lives, build trust back, and, you know, then lead to, you know, reelection of the Democrat in 2024, so that we can kind of get some space between this, you know, full insanity that we have now. But I don't know, you know, I don't know how likely either of those scenarios are, but, you know, you notice that out of the three scenarios, only one of them is good, right? So just on pure, you know, math, it's the minority position. So I don't know. I'm going to work hard next year to defeat white supremacy. That's my goal.
Right on.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll end it with one question for you all on a more positive here, which is, what's one small thing listeners can do to feel, you know, more prepared, both mentally and physically? That's not a big lift. What would you recommend? Maybe each of you in turn, give us your suggestion.
So I would recommend they can download some of our worksheets, obviously, and go through those with their household. And I mean, even just talking through some of these things is one great step that, I mean, you could spend just an hour doing that and feel substantially better about your preparedness level.
Great.
Absolutely. What would you do if there was a 7 to 10 day outage and you were going to stay in your home? What would you do if you had to leave your home? If you had to leave your home in the next 5 minutes, what would you bring? Have that bag packed in your front closet. And even for people that live in apartments, there are tons of space saving ways you can just keep a few extra weeks of food. Don't go crazy and buy MREs. Just have a little more spaghetti than you normally would have. Have a few extra cans of beans, and just never be in a situation where, oh, if the lights went out, I would be SOL and I'd have to go outside. And then you can just live easy. And according to Murphy's Law, then nothing should ever happen.
Nice. I'll add my two cents that have a good can opener. I have been struggling with a rusty can opener, and it was really, really difficult. And so I finally bought a new can opener.
Oh, nice. Good. Yes. Ergonomic can opener is on the kitchen supplies, actually.
Okay.
Cool.
And not electrical can opener, hand right, crank right. can opener. Yes. Yeah.
Right. A low tech version. All right. Well, hey, this has been really fun. I'll make sure that all the listeners here have your website, and hopefully you'll see an uptick in some downloads and some consultations. And I really appreciate you guys coming on and telling us about how we can get prepared and have some peace of mind.
Thanks for having us, Jason.
Okay, everybody. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jesse and Tammy. And I hope you will go visit their website, www.prepperstars.com, and check out their resources and use their services. If this is something that you have been putting off for a while, it's a good thing to do, and then have some peace of mind. So with that, everybody, I hope you have a great rest of the week. If you're enjoying the podcast, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or Stitcher, and share it with your family, friends, and colleagues. Take care, everybody. Be well.